Grota, along with our guest host today,
Scott Hoover.
Scott, we are so glad that you've joined us today. JJ is out today. He had a little surgery this week and is not able to be with us today. And we are very grateful that you have so graciously accepted the invitation to step in his place today and to you know, expound to us the unsearchable riches of Christ.
I'm glad to be here.
We've appreciated you. We have loved you, getting to know you. You've been in the area. You've been working with the Pittsburgh congregation, the North Side, what we in this area called it the Little Blue Building, the Pittsburgh Church of Christ. There are two congregations in Pittsburgh, and we have typically in our area had mostly to do with the congregation where you're preaching. And but tell us a little bit about the merger going on down there.
They have decided to merge. The congregation is small, and they have decided that there is more work to be done that can be done by combining the two congregations. So they are combining. As a matter of fact, this next Sunday will be the last Sunday for the North Side building, and then everyone is moving over to South Greer, and the work should go much better over there.
You know, I'm just excited about it. You know, this is an exciting time for the Lord's Church. I mean, it's unfortunate that the churches have kind of grown small in this sense. I think that that churches go through time periods like that, but I've always noticed that when a church grows, you know, there could be different reasons, like the community goes too small or whatever, but that's not the case with Pittsburgh. It's a thriving community, but maybe it's the case that the members of the church just don't have enough training in personal evangelism, and that could probably be something they'll be working on here in the next years to try to correct that.
The preacher at South Greer is a young man. He's, I say he's a young man. He's young to me, but he is named Charles Babb, very good man. I've visited with him. We've talked about the merger, and he's very excited about them coming over. He's very good at evangelism, personal evangelism, and setting up that kind of thing. So he's very excited.
Well, they've needed that, you know, for a long time. I think sometimes even, you know, even preachers can get, and they had a preacher for a long time, very nice guy, but I don't know, you know, I don't want to be judgmental or anything. I don't know what his personal ministry was like at all, but it just, you know, the churches, you know, sometimes they just, you know, they do better with a little new blood or something like that coming in. And you know, I think their previous minister had a long tenure there, you know, several years.
I'm not sure how many years. It seems like it was 10 to 12 years. I'm not real sure.
Yeah. Well, the Greer Boulevard, you know, for people that are just listening, you know, I don't know what the original split was over in that town, but in Mount Pleasant, there was a downtown church, which was the old, what they call the old North Jefferson Church. And during that time period, you know, there was a split in the church, and at some point the Holt brothers came into the area. They were big non-institutional preachers that were coming in, and so when the Southside Church originally started, my understanding was that they were not a non-institutional congregation, but they became non-institutional after a little while. And I'm not sure if that was the case with the Greer Boulevard, or if it just I'm not sure of the history of the church in Pittsburgh, to tell you the truth. But that being said, you know, Greer Boulevard had been a non-institutional church for several years, and my understanding is that and not of the Greer Boulevard, but of non-institutional churches, a lot of places we've had mainline members. You know, we had kitchens, supported orphans homes, congregations that typically did that kind of stuff, which is what the split was about years ago. That have gone to non-institutional churches and placed membership. They haven't, you know, they have not required members from congregations that support fellow, you know, orphans homes and have kitchens in their building to repent. They haven't made them repent. You know, they haven't made them get rebaptized, you know, if you can use that terminology. Right. So it seems to me that, you know, we're going to each other's gospel meetings, and what at one time divided us is now being rethought about, and you know, it seems to me that, you know, that those issues are not as much of a fellowship issue, or not fellowship issues like they used to be.
There are a lot of things that have split churches over the years that have been over non-essential, non-important matters. And today we're going to be discussing Jeremiah in Jeremiah 46 through 52. And you look at some of the things and the false teachers that came in and the things that they were saying, and it's very similar to some of the stuff that, as far as importance is concerned, it's very similar to some of the things that, that they split over and they were fussing. It's not a new thing.
It's people.
It's people.
Yeah. I tell you what, and so I'm excited about the prospect. Before we really get into, and I'm glad we gave you a little bit of introduction, you've been there about a year and a half now.
Right.
Yeah. And you were in Oklahoma before. Are you an Oklahoma boy?
No, I was born in Fort Worth.
Okay, you're a Texas boy. Okay.
I'm a Texas boy.
All right, well, we are in fellowship then, aren't we? Well, we do have some announcements for you today, and I'd just like to give Scott the honor of shooting the first announcement off to you.
The Abundant Life Here and After, they're having a lectureship at West Hill, October the 8th through the 11th. It's titled An Abundant Life Here and Hereafter. It goes from October the 8th through the 11th, and on Sunday, they have several speakers, and the program for the lecture looks very well thought out, looks like very good speakers. I'm impressed by the speakers that they have. They've got Travis Armstrong. Rose Clayton is speaking to the ladies. Todd Clayton, her husband, is also speaking. And then they've got Steve Higginbotham, Wayne Jones, and Melvin
Sapp.
Odie.
Oh, Melvin Ote. Okay.
Ote.
Yeah.
Speaking, and they're, you know, and it's an excellent program. Looking at the program on Sunday, they've got topics, biblical authority for an abundant life, and by Todd Clayton on, and following that at 10:30, they have Congregational Worship for an Abundant Life by Melvin Ote. And then that night, Melvin Ote is speaking on personal worship for an abundant life, and Todd Clayton is speaking an abundant prayer life, which is anyone involved in church knows that's important. On Monday, they've got a ladies' class by Rose Clayton at 11 a.m. and a men's class by Melvin Ote at 11 a.m. And then at 6 o'clock that evening, they've got When I Survey the Wondrous Cross, I See an Abundant Life by Todd Clayton. Discerning the Lord's Body, Unity at the Table, and that's by Wayne Jones, and that's at 6:45. And then at 7:30, they've got Reasons to Rejoice by Steve Higginbotham. And then on Tuesday, they've got at 11 a.m., they've got a Young at Heart class with various speakers. And then at that evening, they've got Travis Armstrong speaking at 6 o'clock. 6 p.m., How to Introduce New Testament Christianity. At 6:45, How to Restore New Testament Christianity with Steve Higginbotham. And then at 7:30, How to Maintain New Testament Christianity by Wayne Jones. And then on Wednesday, they've got a panel discussion at 6 p.m. And at 6:45, Steve Higginbotham is speaking on Pulling Them from the Fire. And at 7:30, Travis Armstrong is going to be speaking on What Heaven Holds to Me. It looks like just a tremendous lectureship.
Mm-hmm.
There at
what's the contact information in case we want to, in case our GPS doesn't work? How do we get there?
I don't know.
let's see. It might be some information on the back there.
You can on Facebook. You can go to West Hill Church of Christ in Corsicana is their Facebook page. And they've also got a website, westhillchurchofchrist.org. The address is 3400 West State Highway 22, Corsicana, Texas. And the zip is 75110. If you need to make a phone call for directions, that's area code 903-872-5696.
All right. And up next, we've got the North Jefferson Church of Christ Ladies' Day, well, with Catherine Baker. Now, this is not in chronological order by any means, but I just want to get you ladies out there to mark your calendars for November the 11th. That's an important day to remember, November 11th at 10 a.m. Registration, which is come as early as you want to. They're going to have all kinds of stuff out there in the foyer, coffee, donuts, hors d'oeuvres, and stuff like that. They usually do it upright. Lunch is going to be provided. It would be cool if you could RSVP. That means call ahead, tell us, let us know whether you're coming or not at 903-572-1136. Again, this is of Ladies' Day at the North Jefferson Church of Christ in Mount Pleasant, Texas, with Catherine Baker, the preacher's wife of Andy, you know, it was Andy Baker's wife over in Maud, Texas. And the theme is Peace in the Valley. Peace in the Valley. And then we got a gospel meeting coming up. What's that?
There's a gospel meeting at North Jefferson Church of Christ in Mount Pleasant. The theme of that one is Jesus or Me, What Will It Be? And that's October the 15th through the 18th. Kevin Cawley from New Boston, Texas, is going to be speaking on Sunday morning at 9 a.m. The topic is The Only Thing to Fear. At 10 a.m. Sunday morning, it's All About Me. At 6 p.m., his topic will be The Secret That Isn't a Secret. On Monday night at 7 p.m., The Green-Eyed Monster. And then on Tuesday at 10 a.m., he's going to be speaking on If I Were a Rich Man. And then at 7 p.m., Mount St. Helens All Over Again. And then Wednesday night at 7 p.m., he's going to be talking about The Empire of Desire. If you need more information, you can call the North Jefferson Church of Christ at area code 903-572-1136.
Think they'll be glad to talk to you about the gospel meeting?
I think they would be excited to talk to you about that. You can also look at their website. It's njcofc.com, and they'll give you more information about that.
Well, very good. I think old Kevin will do a pretty good job. I've heard him preach over at Oak Grove and other places, and the Brotherhood is pretty good stuff. At the same time, October 15th through the 19th, if you're closer to Marshall, Texas, the downtown church, they call themselves the Marshall Church of Christ, is having a gospel meeting as well with Joe Ruiz. Now, Joe Ruiz is the father of your predecessor, one of your predecessors there at Pittsburgh, which was Kevin Ruiz. And Joe's been preaching the gospel for 44 years. He received his training at the Preacher Training School in Pensacola, Florida. And he and his wife, Bonnie, have been missionaries for like 38 years. He is accomplished in several languages and conducts trips to Peru and works with Spanish congregations in his home area of South Avon, Mississippi. He's preached the gospel throughout Southeast Asia, including Taiwan, Singapore, Philippines, Indonesia, Thailand, Hong Kong, China, mainland, and Australia. He's trilingual, fluent in English, Spanish, and Chinese, Mandarin Chinese, that is. And, you know, it's interesting, when I first met him, he was, I think, in, I'm not sure if he was, you know, exactly where he was located. He might have been. Now, if you speak Mandarin Chinese, can you live in Singapore? You know, I can't remember which one of those languages goes with which one of those places, but you know, China maybe. he was doing mission work, and the church in Beeville was supporting him, and that was my home congregation. And I can remember him coming out, and this is all I remember. I was in high school, so I didn't really know much, but he came in and he was talking about how that every culture, every civilization has a global flood story. Now, whether it's the biblical account or not, it's just interesting that their tradition or their history and culture has a flood story. And the Chinese character for eight is a picture of a boat. And I don't know what the particulars are. Like I said, he could probably share you the particulars of that. But to have a picture of a boat represent the character eight, that kind of lends itself to that eight people saved on the ark concept, you know, because everybody has that flood story in their history. And I think that was very interesting. And then he brought that out. That's one thing I kind of remember when I first met the guy. But anyway, they're going to have a lectures, a series of lectures this week, October 15th through the 19th, on what causes the church to grow. Now, think about it. Everybody's interested in church growth, so they're talking about it. The Lord's work and missions, focusing on the love of God, having a deep abiding faith in God, understanding what is man's most precious possession, challenging people to examine their faith, being passionate, not past feeling, being prepared to meet our God. And this goes through Thursday, so our gospel meeting goes through Wednesday, so we're actually able to get down there on that Thursday and hear Joe Reese preach. And so that's the Downtown Church of Christ, and that is, Marshall, I am looking for contact information on this flyer, and I don't actually see it on this flyer. I just have an address, and it's 414 North Washington Avenue, and it's going to be a bilingual gospel meeting. So I know that they'll be glad to have you. What's next?
We've got something else coming October the 14th and 15th. It's the Back to the Bible Lectures at Park Heights Church of Christ in Hamilton, Texas, at 1300 East Boynton Street. And on Saturday, they're going to be talking about Christ is the Good Shepherd. Christ is the head of the church. Christ is our Passover. Christ is our high priest. And then on Sunday, they're going to talk about Christ is the Word and Christ is our example. The speakers are Mel Hutzler, Carl McCann, Tim Burrows, Johnny McKagan.
McCarron? Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Joshua Moore and Brian Braswell, looks like. And I probably missed.
No, you got that right.
Their contact information is area code 254-386-3953. And that looks like a really good lecture as well.
That'd be, you know where that is? You know where Hamilton, Texas is? That is just south of Stephenville on 281.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, about 30, 45 minutes down the road. So then there's the East Texas Area Singing School, hosted by the Cream Level Road Church of Christ, the Central Church of Christ on Cream Level Road in Athens, Texas. Everybody up here knows that's where Kerry Clark is preaching. It's going to be Saturday, October the 14th, from 2 to 5 p.m. All young men, all old men, all men, young and old, from area congregations are invited to participate. This is going to be taught by Jason Sparks, who is renowned for his singing week at the Green Valley Bible Camp in Rogers, Arkansas. He's going to be covering fundamentals like basic sight reading, finding pitch, choosing songs, tempo, emphasis on the words. And then this is going to be followed up with an area-wide singing, and all are invited to the area-wide congregational singing starting at 5 p.m. with refreshments to follow. Now, let me tell you something about those refreshments, brother. I have eaten the food that this congregation has fixed before. Those people know how to cook. I'm not telling you to go for the food. All right? I'm not telling you to go for the food.
But that's always a plus.
But I'm going to tell you what. If you stay for the food, your mouth is going to be very happy. All right?
That's always good.
All right. What do we got? One last announcement.
The last announcement we've got is on the Bible Bowl, Northeast Bible Bowl of Northeast Texas. The topic of study is 1st and 2nd Corinthians from the New King James Version. And we've got the testing schedule, which is Monday, October the 9th, hosted by Maud. And that's from on 1st Corinthians, the first four chapters.
Now, they're hosting in the sense they're actually going to provide the meal at the church there at North Jefferson. So it's the...
Right. The testing center is at North Jefferson Church of Christ there in Mount Pleasant. November the 13th, it's going to cover 1 Corinthians 5 through 8.
Now, I'll tell you something about that. This flyer, it just tells you what, you know, each second Monday of the month is when it's going to be. But there are, listen to this, not just kid teams, 1st grade through 12th grade, but it's also... adults can come and participate in group tests. So,
right, the adults can also participate, which I think is great because the adults need to study as much as the kids do. We sometimes think of Bible bowls for kids.
For like kids, yeah.
And this is something that's excellent because it challenges the adults. When I was in Sealing, Oklahoma, one of the things that we did was our kids participated in Bible bowl activities. And in order to encourage them, I had the adults also study the same material. And then we challenged the adults to take the same test that the kids did. And it was quite interesting because the adults didn't want to be shown up by the kids, so they studied harder than
they ever
studied
before. A little competition between the kids and the adults. I think that'll be healthy.
It was a good thing for them to see how they could get together and all study the Word and learn from it. It was very good.
All right. Well, let's get into the book today because we are just almost we've gotten our time just goes so quick in this place. There's a lot of good stuff going on in the Brotherhood. Want to share that with you, but today we want to shift the attention over to Jeremiah chapter 46. And Scott, what are we dealing with here in this chapter?
In Jeremiah 46, Jeremiah is speaking against Egypt. Well, God is speaking against Egypt. God is going to tell Egypt that even though they think they're a very powerful nation, they're not going to be. God is going to allow Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian king, to come in and take over Egypt because of some of the wickedness that Egypt has done in the past to the Israelites. And so Nebuchadnezzar is going to come in. He warns Egypt, you better pack your bags, you better be ready, because it's going to happen. Egypt was under the mindset that they were very powerful and they could destroy and take over anybody, and it didn't happen. God said, you know, you are not able to battle against Yahweh. And so as they're doing that, that's what's going to happen to them. Nebuchadnezzar does come in and destroys several of their cities and the main cities on the east side of Egypt is overthrown by Nebuchadnezzar and his army.
You know, it's interesting, you know, the famous Battle of Carchemish, and, you know, Egyptian Pharaoh Necho is the guy that's in charge at the time, and he is soundly defeated by Nebuchadnezzar. And this is interesting to me because when I think of Nebuchadnezzar, I always think of Daniel. The book of Daniel. I never think of Jeremiah in the Bible, and this is just another book of the Bible that you can plug into your brain and say, okay, hey, you know what? Jeremiah was also contemporary. He was there, or he was at least had the prophetic ability to you know, God had already revealed to him what Nebuchadnezzar was going to do. And these weren't so obscure prophecies that we didn't even know who we're dealing with here. We're dealing with the world leaders at that time, and old Nebuchadnezzar sitting there beside the Euphrates River, ready to pounce on that guy, and the pride. You know, we talked about pride in our pre-discussions of this chapter, and in verses 3 and 4, you know, prepare buckler and a shield and advance for battle, harness the horses, mount, O horsemen. You know, they're ready to take their stations with their helmets, polish your spears, put on your armor. And why have I seen it? They are dismayed and have turned backward. Their warriors are beaten down and have fled in haste. They look not back. Terrors on every side, declares the Lord. And so, you know, the panic, you know, the pride is there, but then, you know, that is their downfall. And there's this panic that ensues, verses 5 and 6. Terror fills their heart. They flee without a backward glance. If you look at verses 13 through 18, Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, is kind of a loudmouth who missed his opportunity. He says, the word of the Lord spoke to Jeremiah the prophet about the coming of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, to strike the land of Egypt. Declare in Egypt and proclaim in Migdol, proclaim in Memphis and Tahpenes, say, stand ready and be prepared, for the sword shall devour around you. And they lose total confidence. Egypt does in Pharaoh's ability to deliver them, and I think that's interesting how that there's a turn in the people's confidence. You know, we have a country right now that's I think it's lost its way. Our country right now is You know, we have been a mighty power in times past. I believe that doubt is creeping in a little bit, because I think we're starting to realize, man, you know, we have been a prideful nation. And, you know, the only thing that's going to make America great again is if we humble ourselves before the mighty hand of God, right?
Absolutely.
You know, that's the only thing I can see.
Until we go back to God and understand this nation was founded on Christian principles, and until we can get back to God and start turning our lives back to God instead of the world's idea of anything goes and we can do what we want. The Israelites were so bad about doing that, of following after their own ideas, whatever they wanted to do. And there were always people that would tell them, it's okay. Whatever you want to do is okay. It's fine. And God allows these nations to come in and take over the Israelites. And we see that. And that's what we're going to see in Jeremiah, as Jeremiah warns them, folks, you've got to turn back to God.
You've got to turn back to God. And not just you, but he's judging all the other nations now.
Absolutely.
You know, so Egypt is getting it now. They're taking their whipping. Babylonian swords are covered with Egyptian blood in verses 10 and 11. And then Egypt has now become the shame of the nations. In verse number 12, the Bible says, the nations have heard of your shame, and the earth is full of your cry. For warrior has stumbled against warrior. They have both fallen together. And so the earth is filled with the cries of despair. Their capital cities have been destroyed. Not a single person in those cities lives. Their gods, now it says they're gods. Now Paul says there are no gods. You know, but the judgment is against their gods for the sake of the benefit of their understanding of these gods. When you look at verse number 25 of the text, and it says, the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, said, behold, I'm bringing punishment upon Ammon of Thebes, and Pharaoh and Egypt and her gods and her kings upon Pharaoh and those who trust in him. God is going to demonstrate that their gods are not really gods at all.
Absolutely.
And that's what's really happening here. Pharaoh and the people are this enslaved by Babylon. In verse number 26 says, I will deliver them into the hand of those who seek their life, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, and his officers. So they're coming in. They're going to take over. And it says, afterward, the Lord says, afterward, Egypt shall be inhabited as in the days of old, declares the Lord. They will recover from the ravages of war. But it'll be a time. You know, it'll take a little time. This is a call to Egypt to realize that there is only one God. They would do well to research the God of Joseph.
Absolutely. They had a chance to do that and refused, and God is going to take them and punish them. He is going to let them survive, which is different than he did with some of the nations. Some of the nations he totally destroys, and they are no longer in existence. Egypt still is. But they need to go back to God. They need to understand who God is and the power of God. It's interesting, in verse 20 of chapter 46, it says, Egypt is like a fine young cow, but a horsefly is surely coming from the north to attack her. You know, they are so proud of who they are and their gods that are, well, one of their gods is named Ap, who is the god, the bull god, and they built these towers to the bull god and that kind of thing. And to talk about these things and describe them as a cow, but a horsefly is going to come in. And that, of course, is Nebuchadnezzar who comes in and overpowers them.
I think it's interesting. Does anybody listening today know what a horsefly is? I mean, I'm sure we've got people listening today that know what a horsefly is. I do a camp over at I've never seen horseflies as bad as I've ever seen them as over at Arklatex Christian Camp. I mean, and people know, come dusk, they need to steer clear of the lighted porch around that mess hall, because those little stinkers are everywhere, and they have quite a bite to them. I mean, you can see you know, grown men dance around like sissy boys in the bathhouse trying to escape the horsefly, man. And so for if you know what a horsefly is, and to have a Nebuchadnezzar be described as a horsefly, man, you know, it's a you know, that's, you know, the bite is good. They're really good at getting their targets.
Absolutely.
And they fly quick, and they're not to be ignored.
They can cause a lot of pain in a very short time. And it's interesting, in the town that we lived in Oklahoma, one of the towns that we lived in, we lived by the Chickasaw National Park. And in there, when we would walk our dogs, the horse flies would attack.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be really careful, because they are really painful and they can raise
Well, oh man, I tell you what. All right, well, so what an interesting analogy or a metaphor to describe old Neb. Well, we go to chapter 47, and chapter 47 short little chapter. Remember, chapter and verse marks were put in here by translators. This is just to help you break the text up. But the next judgment is coming on the Philistines. And so the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the Philistines before Pharaoh struck down Gaza. And so here's what God has to say. Behold, waters are rising out of the north. I mean, think about the north. There's always Babylon, isn't it? You know, the north is coming. And shall be an overflowing torrent. They shall overflow the land, all that fills it, the city whose... and those who dwell in it. Men shall cry out, and every inhabitant of the land shall wail. Look at that. The noise of the stamping of hoofs of stallions, ta-tump, 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 and the rushing of his chariots, and the rumbling of the wheels. The fathers look not back to their children. That's unfortunate, isn't it?
Absolutely. Just
such fear that they're not even caring about their kids.
Yeah.
So feeble are their hands because of the day that is coming to destroy all the Philistines, to cut off from Tyre and Sidon every helper. Now, you know, Jesus mentions Tyre and Sidon, and I wonder if this is the time period that he's referring to. You know, if Tyre and Sidon, you know, would have repented, you know, and here one's greater, you know.
Right.
And but anyway, Tyre and Sidon, every helper that remains, for the Lord is destroying the Philistines, the remnant of the coastland of Kaphtor. Baldness has come upon Gaza. Ashkelon has perished. O remnant of the valley, how long will you gash yourselves? And, you know, I think it's interesting, the reference here to gashing yourselves. You know, people bring upon themselves their own punishments. And it's like... you know, whether this is talking about a literal reference or whether it's as a metaphorical reference to the punishment they're bringing on themselves, I have many times, you know, reinforced to my children when they're being punished for, you know, whatever it is that they're doing. I help them to understand that, you know, that they chose that. They chose the consequence when they chose to do what was wrong. And they say, no, I didn't. I said, yeah, you did. If you didn't want the consequence, you shouldn't have done. You should make a different choice.
We live in a society today that is difficult because so many people think that there is no consequence for their actions. And unless you teach your children, there are consequences for your behavior. As one lady told me one time, this is what you chose to do. You knew the rules. You knew what the rules were. And you knew if you broke the rules, this was the consequence that was mm-hmm. going to happen. So you actually chose the consequence. And that's what the Philistines are doing. They were warned. They were told. But they still chose destruction.
So if I understand this right, the Lord is going to use – who's going to destroy the Philistines? Who's he using to do that? Is it Egypt, or is it going to be you know, Babylon? It you know, I don't I'm not sure, because it looked like here in verse number one that the Lord came to Jeremiah the prophet concerning the Philistines before Pharaoh struck down Gaza. So, you know, Gaza is part of the Philistines, and so it looks like that Pharaoh has been empowered. You know, God has empowered the Egyptian army for a time to do this. He's using one country against another. And, you know, I don't know what God is doing behind the scenes right now. I don't have prophetic powers. And I certainly don't have any modern-day revelation. But he's allowed that North Korean little man out there to be kind of a thorn in our flesh in the country. You know, why has God allowed that little that country, that dictator, to be a threat to the culture around him? I don't know the answer to that. But it reminds me that different countries at different times can bow up and attack another country around. It was kind of like Russia just a couple of years ago. You think about Russia bowing up. You know, they're you know, sticking their chest out, trying to show their power. And, you know, they want, you know, monetary control over, you know, natural resources right around them. And they're trying to, you know, trying to make a living and grow their infrastructure and their economy as well. I mean, I understand there's some reasoning for all that, but still, you know, Russia is a looming threat to a lot of people. We're kind of keeping our eye on Russia, and we're kind of keeping our eye on North Korea, and you know, there's a lot of countries out there that at different times they bow up and
that want to show how important how important they are, and that's what Egypt did. That's what the Philistines did. The Philistines were defeated by Nebuchadnezzar in, I believe it was in 604 BC, when he defeats city of, let's see what the name of it, Ascalon,
mm-hmm.
And the seacoast, and when he goes to attack that.
Okay. And then next country to be destroyed on the list is the judgment concerning Moab in chapter 48. What do we have here? Let's unpack that chapter.
Once again, God is telling them, as he talks about Moab, how terrible it will be for Nebo, who seems to be the ruler. It will be ruined. The town of Kiriathaim will be disgraced and captured. The strong city will be disgraced and leveled. Moab is one of those places that is trying to flex its muscles and show, and Moab thought that they were really a big thing. And God is going to let them know. And it's interesting, their god is Chemosh, and he's going to be taken into captivity. God is
verse number 7, isn't it? So their trusted God is not going to be able to save them.
Right.
And if you look at verse number 35 in connection with that, it says, and this is, I don't think this is a metaphorical, I think they really do like self-mutilate in this religion. But it says, "And I will bring an end to Moab, declares the Lord. Him who offers sacrifices in the high place and makes offerings to his God. Therefore my heart moans for Moab like a flute, and my heart moans like a flute for the men of Kir Hesseth. Therefore the riches they have gained shall perish." Now it says in verse 37, "For every head is shaved and every beard cut off. On all the heads are what? Gashes, and around the waist is sackcloth. On all the housetops of Moab and in the squares there is nothing but lamentation, for I have broken Moab like a vessel for which no one cares, declares the Lord. How it is broken, how they wail, how Moab has turned his back in shame. So Moab has become a derision and a horror to all that are around him." Now remember, folks, that Moab and Ammon, now this country of Moab is named after this boy, and there were brothers, Moab and Ammon, and then they became nations, right? And Moab and Ammon were the incestual children of Lot by his daughters. So right. That kind of gives you a little idea of their history there. And I think about this, you know, Lot was given an opportunity before, I mean, he fled from Sodom and Gomorrah. But I wonder if he, what you know, how the story would be different if he had just trusted the Lord and listened to the angels. And, you know, remember, they were trying to get him out to a certain place. Off the top of my head, I can't remember where that is, but he bargains with those angels to go to a different place. And if he had just gone where God wanted him to go in the first place, I wonder what how the story would be different.
Right. When his daughters come to him and have that relationship with him that produces these boys, and it's because they get him drunk. It's a terrible thing.
They have no faith in God.
They're not depending. And Lot had every opportunity because when he, and it talks about him being a righteous man and why he leaves Sodom and why they get him out of Sodom and the angels take them out. And it's sad that his family doesn't follow in his steps and understand that. And it's interesting, in verse 29, it says, "We have heard that the people of Moab are proud and very conceited. They are arrogant. They think they're so important. They are very haughty in their hearts." And God doesn't put up with arrogance. God doesn't. God has a problem with pride because people think that it's because of them that they go on. And I see in that, I see so many people today that look at, look what I have accomplished, look what I have done, instead of giving God the glory for the fact that God has blessed me in this way so that I can do whatever it is I do. They tend to think, this is what I've done.
Right.
And they forget God. And
you know, I think is of interest here, and this is a little bit twist. I mean, we always think of Moab as an evil nation, and we think of that Chemosh religion as being horrific, you know, offering babies, you know, sacrifices and stuff like that. But, you know, Jeremiah is actually heartbroken over God's judgment on Moab in chapter 48, verses 31 through 34, and also verse number 36. "My heart moans for Moab like a flute. My heart moans like a flute for these men of Kir-Hesareth." And I think, you know, at first I thought, well, that's just God talking. Well, no, actually, if you follow the personal pronouns, it looks more like Jeremiah. But I no doubt that God feels, you know, the same way. I mean, he is not willing that anybody should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And that's true of all time. But I think it's interesting that the preacher here is heartbroken over this judgment. I mean, it is such a sad situation when you know that the right thing could have been chosen. People could have spared, all this death and destruction could have been spared had people just turned their hearts to the Lord. You know, they just could have turned their hearts and become humble people. And it's amazing to know that that God would put up with so much, but when their pride and their arrogance got to such a point, you know, at that point, there's no turning back. I mean, you're not going to convert people who are religiously wrong when they have a heart that's hard. They're just not going to do it.
When we get to the point that we think we know it all, we're in trouble. Big trouble, because that's arrogance, that's pride.
Mm-hmm.
I can't learn anything new, and you know, the Bible is a living book. We can always learn from the Bible if we'll study it. But that's not just reading it, that's studying it, that's getting in to look at a passage. What does this passage say for me to do and how to live? And that's what's important in studying the Bible, because if we just read through it, we miss so much.
I wonder if we've made a study of the Bible, you know, we approach it with an academic mentality, which is not wrong. But if it never becomes more than just an academic exercise, And never really just penetrates the heart and affects change, true change in the way we think, the way we behave. And you know, the Bible always, you know, is telling us that we're like a child, we're developing, we're growing in the grace and the knowledge of the Lord.
Right.
We're supposed to become mature. And so there's this growth process. Romans 12 tells us that we're transformed, you know, by the renewing of our mind. That's a process as I understand it. And if we're not dedicated to that process,
right,
then we're not going to be changed.
It's always a growing situation that we have to realize. I need to further my education in the Word. I need to always be studying the Word so that I can grow. As people, when we stop growing, we die.
And
it doesn't matter our age. We need to always be looking for growth and what can I learn from what God has to say to me. Because what he says to me today when I read a passage is one thing. 10 years from now, when I read that same passage, it can very easily say something different to me because my life experiences have changed.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand in a different way what the Word is saying today. So I can always learn. I can always grow. And God takes us a little bit at a time. If you take a child and try to get him up when he's 2 months old and have him start walking, it's not going to work.
Not ready yet, is he?
He's not ready. And you've got to help him get to the point that he can grow so that he can walk. And that's not if a child, it's a toddler that is walking and he falls down, that's not a big issue with us. If he continues to fall down and doesn't learn from those experiences and get to where he's not falling down all the time, then there's a problem that we need to check out. But it's a growth process. And it's the same thing with us as Christians. We are growing. And, yeah, we're going to sometimes make mistakes, but we still want to grow, and we want to be going in the direction that we need to be going. And that's the maturity that you're talking about in growing in the maturity of the Lord.
Well, when we've looked at Moab, and we've tried to derive some lessons as we've gone along from Moab, I find it interesting as we transition in verse number 47, God says, in the latter days, I will restore the fortunes of Moab. And in other words, God just destroyed it, and then he's going to build it back up.
Right.
And that's what he does with us a lot of times is if we'll humble ourselves before the Lord, he will lift us up. He might break our heart, but he's going to rebuild it again. And I'm perplexed in some ways about why God would allow a heathen nation like this to be brought back. But I mean, you look at what he did for Nineveh. I mean, he allowed Nineveh an opportunity to repent. Of course, later destroyed it. You know,
right?
So we go to chapter 49, and now we have the judgment on Ammon. There's Moab's brother. There's their cousins.
Right.
And chapter 49, in a nutshell, is basically you got Ammon and you got Edom and you got Damascus and Kedar and Hazor. And again, it talks about Edom again towards the end of the chapter. So you've got several little nations that are being considered for punishment. The first one is Ammon, there in verse number 1. The Ammonites have driven out the Israelite tribe of Gad and are occupying their homes. And so the results in verses 2 through 5 is saying that God is going to burn the Ammonite cities and drive them from the occupied lands and allow their neighbors to chase them from their land. The reassurance comes in, look at verse number 6. The reassurance here in verse number 6 is, but afterward I will restore the fortunes of the Ammonites, declares the Lord. So what is that? Is that not grace?
It sure looks like grace to me.
I'm perplexed. You know, as a Bible student, I'd be thinking, well, here they are, man, they're done. You know, no, God's going to let them.
God's going to give them the chance. And God continually does that. He wants people to follow him, and he gives them opportunity after opportunity, and he will take a punishment upon them so that they can learn. And it's like happens with us today, there are things that happen to us that we can learn from or we can become bitter on and do that. He tells us in Hebrews, the 12th chapter, that there's going to be discipline for us as Christians. And we can take those and we can become very bitter or we can become very loving and understand, okay, God, what is the lesson that you want me to learn and how can I move forward? And that's what God is doing with the Ammonites. He wants them to learn and be able to move forward, and they struggle with that.
I'm just going to kind of wrap that part of it up, but I want to pull out one thing, and then, of course, you know, we're getting really down to our time. We've got like 3-4 minutes left in the program, but why do I do this? It's like I preach, I do the same problem at home. But Edom, Ammon, Damascus, all these places, God is addressing their pride. Then we move into chapter 50 to 52, and this is Jeremiah's description of Babylon's destruction and Israel's deliverance. And there is so much here that describes the sins of Babylon. She has plundered Judah, God's chosen people. She's defiled the temple, chapter 51, verse 51. She's proud, chapter 50, verse 32. She's totally given over to idolatry, chapter 50, 51. And so the severity of this punishment is something that God delivers a lot of words. You know, they're going to be like a desert wasteland. They're going to be slaughtered. They're going to be smashed. The young men and warriors are going to be killed. Her wise men are going to become fools. The cities are going to be utterly sacked. But there's a symbolic scroll there in chapter 51, verses 59 through 64. And Jeremiah gives a special scroll to Sariah, an exile and former officer under Zedekiah, who was en route to Babylon. And it describes God's judgment of Babylon. And in it are instructions, verses 61 through 64. Upon arriving in Babylon, Sariah is to read the scroll, then tie a rock to it and throw it into the Euphrates River, illustrating that Babylon will soon sink, never to rise again. In contrast to that, as we look at the collective evidence of these two chapters, is Israel's deliverance. They're like sheep gone astray. They've been forsaken by their own leaders. If you look at chapter 50, verses 6 through 8, my people have been lost sheep. Their shepherds have led them astray, turning them away onto the mountains. And so righteousness was forgotten. They are devoured both by the Assyrians and the Babylonians. The Assyrians eat them and the Babylonians crack their bones. This is what verses 17 through 20 say in chapter 50. But there's a shepherd in chapter 50, verses 33 through 34. He's the one who redeems them. He's strong. His name is the Lord Almighty. Now, I think this is highly significant because the shepherd, the true shepherd, we get a picture of Jesus here, even in the Old Testament. And the Bible says that in verse 33 and 34 that he's going to defend them and give them rest again in Israel. Verses 15 and 16 of chapter 51. Chapter 51, verses 15 and 16 says, he made the earth by his power and he preserves it by his wisdom. And in verse number 17 through 19, he alone, unlike the idols, is the true God. All idols will be destroyed, but God is the creator of everything that exists. And so, from this, Scott, you know, we see Israel's delivered. They obviously had been in captivity. You know, Babylon was their captor. What did Israel do that caused them to go into captivity?
Israel or Judah? Which one are
Judah,
you?
Judah.
Judah is, they just simply turned away from God. Their kings, Zedekiah and Jehoiakim and some of the kings that they had were very wicked. They turned against God. They went back to their worldly ways of living and forgot God. Basically, it's because they leave God.
Can we do that today?
Absolutely. If we don't follow God, if we continue to stay away and quit following God, we're in the same situation that they're in. We will be destroyed. We think we are so powerful, but so did they. They thought they were such a powerful, strong nation, but because of that pride, they took it upon themselves to live like they wanted to instead of what God wanted for them. And as a result, they were destroyed.
Well, you've given us a lot of food to think about. This is a lot of chapters to take in today. But I am so grateful that we've had this devotional thought of realizing that, hey, you know what? We don't have to make the same mistakes. We can remember God and keep His commandments. We don't have to forget Him. Well, that's about all the time that we have for this week on Wednesday's edition of Mornings for the Master. I'm Chris Grote along with
Scott Hoover.
And we just want to bid you Godspeed and God bless, and thank you for being with us on the program. Join us tomorrow at 9.
You've been listening to Mornings for the Master on the Gospel Radio Network. Remember to join us each weekday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Standard Time, or catch the replay at 9 p.m. Central Time. You can also contact us at mornings@tgrn.org if you have any questions we can help you with, or if you have events you would like to submit to our bulletin board, or just with general feedback about the program or network. We would love to hear from you. As we've had opportunity to spend time with the Master this morning in His Word, let's remember His words in Luke 6:46, when He said, "Why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" He goes on to say in verse 47 and 48, "Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show to you whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock." Let's show the wisdom of that builder and go now to live for the Master.